Kia ora and welcome to this edition of Spectrum for Radio New Zealand National. I'm Lisa Thompson and I've come to Waiheke Island in Auckland's Hauraki Gulf to meet bespoke cobbler Sue Ingalls at her shoe shed. Do you love feet? Do you find feet attractive?
I've not been asked that one before. I will always notice feet first. Feet and hands.
And what do they tell you? What can you discern from somebody's feet?
Sometimes I do grimace, yeah. Well, our feet carry us and take everything. They take our personality and reflect that. So, yeah, you can't quite often tell if someone is not happy or not relaxed in their manner. But not completely, huh? It's not always like that. So I find them intriguing. And sometimes it becomes a long life story. Or a short time with a long life story sort of wedged into it.
It's estimated the average person walks up to 7,000 steps a day. That equates to a journey of over 128,000 kilometres in a lifetime, or more than three times around the Earth. So take a look at your feet and the shoes you're wearing. How long would you estimate they took to make? An hour, three at most. For bespoke cobbler Sue Ingalls, a single pair of shoes can take up to 36 hours to create. She estimates she's now handcrafted over 4,000 pairs of shoes, and while she says it's a number that has little meaning to her, she will never forget the shoe's owners and their stories.
I might not remember their name immediately. I'd always remember them if I saw them.
You'd always remember the shoe?
Yeah, absolutely.
Have you ever spotted one of your pairs out and about?
Oh, yes, many times. In various places, you know, there's been groups of us, totally unintended. I can think of a couple of weddings in particular where there was a group of us and we had to have a sushi photograph because everybody had shoes on.
Oh, that's interesting.
And, of course, I've had shoes walk into my studio. I think of one in particular now that you asked me that. In Wellington, I had a studio shop at the top end of Cuba Street. Mm-hmm. And a woman walked into my shop and she said, "Are you Sue Ingalls from Camden Lock?" Yeah. I looked at her feet and she had a pair of sandals on that I'd made, honestly, about 10 years before. I couldn't believe it. Been to the Himalayas and it'd been all over the place.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. So they've had a great life in the 10 years.
Really
I'm talking with Sue inside her workshop, a converted wash house no larger than 5 metres by three. Above our heads hang hundreds of wooden and plastic lasts, all specifically designed to the proportions of individual customers' feet. Describing her own size 9.5 feet as big and wide, Sue says she hated wearing shoes growing up on her parents' citrus and then dairy farm in South Africa.
I was born in a town called Grahamstown, which is one of the old settler towns of the Eastern Cape of South Africa, but one of the first what they called settler towns. It's close to where the Xhosa people live, which is Nelson Mandela country. That's where I'm born, and I was brought up first in the city, but then when I was five or so, we moved to a farm, and I spent all my growing years on a farm in the Eastern Cape, surrounded by the Xhosa people. So I had a very special upbringing, I believe, being surrounded by they're very spiritual people, Xhosa sing. And, yeah, I learned a lot from that. Of course, I grew up in apartheid, so I learned a lot from that too. I learned from both worlds very quickly and absorbed a lot of it. And I was surrounded by animals, so that was I regard it as a particularly special time.
And growing up, it would strike me very much as a barefoot sort of existence.
Oh, absolutely. You're so right. I didn't wear shoes, didn't like shoes. Then I grew up into being a teenager and I had what were deemed as big feet because they were at the end of the range, you know, the last size, and, of course, very wide. So shoes didn't fit me and I'm a redhead, so I used to have temper tantrums and leave the shop.
Oh,
leave mum in the shop, rather.
Standing there off with a shoe.
Yes. I'm not having any of them. And so people often ask me, is that why you make shoes? I don't think that's the reason, but it was very nice for me to be able to create my first pair of shoes or sandals, it was in those days, that fitted. And then
I haven't
worn anything else since, to be honest.
You crafted them yourself?
Yes.
You worked out how to make them?
I did. I was studying at university, studying to be an accountant because I thought that was what one did. One has good grades. We were taught in South Africa to be like that, you know. Don't question anything. Go to university and get a degree. So I did that, and I hated it, and I was battling through my degree, just hating it for many reasons and learning a bit more of the country that I grew up in because we were behind closed doors. Everything was banned. You couldn't read books. You couldn't watch the movies that you, my fellow colleagues here or in England would have. And I think that that was a very, very sad thing to do to everybody, but it also, a lot of the world maybe didn't realise quite how it was and how, I know from my family's point of view, my family didn't seem to know anything. I sensed things. I was the little one who sensed things. I was always, I suppose I spent a lot of time on the farm on my own. The others were, my siblings were all at boarding school, so I was always in the orchard wanting to pick oranges with the workers who would laugh at me. Sissy, and I go, yes, 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 I am coming to pick with you. You know, and it was always this, and you'd sort of hear this thing, the white woman doesn't do this, and you put it all together, but you accept it as norm. That's what you're brought up to think.
Did you have a question?
Yes, and as I went through schooling, I questioned and I started getting quite angry, partly as being a young woman. I got angry about those things because I lived in a very, very matriarchal society that decided who I would be and where I would go. And, of course, our life was that way inclined. The black woman must make your bed for you and you must not do nothing. And I didn't. I was a person who liked to do things, but as I got older, I questioned more and more, and I think I was probably a late comer. By the time I got to university, I was really questioning, and so I went to every talk I could find, and of course I started learning things very quickly because our university campus was an open books place.
Mm.
Yeah, the police were not allowed on campus and people could come and tell us. So I learned a lot very quickly and I was very shocked. And the more I learned, the more shocked I was, and I got very, very angry. I guess the redhead coming out of me. But bumbled along, and you know, I had lots of when I came home with questions, my parents didn't want me to question because they were scared.
Yeah.
So the more I questioned, the more they shut me up and said, no, we don't talk about that. And
I was going to say, there would be an element of danger to questioning too much.
And I was always full of questions. Why is that, Mum? Etc. So I sort of then found my own way, as you do, and you learn through friends and made more friends, and I used university as a learning platform in that respect. I got my degree eventually, not quite as an accountant, but as an economist. Every holiday I spent in the leather workshop, I found a shoemaker and I started learning from him. And all my holidays, if I wasn't in Mike's workshop, I would have a book, and as soon as I got enough money together, I'd be, you know, cobbling something together, and I used to bravely go to the Cape Town market and sell them.
What was the reaction?
Oh, I made some money, yeah. Good. Bought some more leather. I'll just giggle now and I'll see what I'd made. And Mum was proudly wearing a pair of my sandals and said, don't you dare tell anybody I made those. Yeah, learned quickly.
Did you find you came to a crossroads leaving university? Did you think, do I stay and try and agitate some form of change if I can? Or
You know, I'd gotten quite almost past that stage by then, to be honest. I wasn't a very organised person in that I didn't belong to a particular party. I didn't work for the ANC. I did think that they were probably the bomb, but I just didn't like any of it. And I was really at the stage where I didn't really want to negotiate anymore. I'd seen a lot, I'd heard a lot. I'd heard far too much, actually. Seen far too much. I was so tired of the lies that were going on around me and of always being completely unable to do anything. I suppose I was young and impatient, and I was so tired of hearing Nelson, who is just never, ever seemed to me, he was never going to get out of prison. There he was. He was just down the road from where I lived, you know. We used to shout at him every time you go past the prison, Viva Mandela! But inside, I was just such an angry girl. I was like, oh. So when I left South Africa, I was really angry with it, but I just knew that I needed to get out and actually have a look at the world and start learning. And so that was my mission. So I jumped ship, basically. We we managed to wangle a working passage. So I went to Canada.
Gosh, what a journey that must have been.
Yeah, it was big. I'd never flown or gone anywhere before.
Sue made her way from Canada to New York and then on to London. And it was here she turned her craft into a career. After trading her sandals and shoes at various festivals and markets, Sue studied shoe design at Cordwainers College and ran a boutique shoe and leather goods business in Camden Lock. She also gained invaluable experience as an intern for one of Britain's most famous shoe makers, John Lobb.
The first time I went in there, I mean, I was absolutely petrified. I thought, I don't know if I think I may even have turned around once and come back in again, thinking, I don't know about this. As soon as I started walking down the stairs with my guide, because I had rung and I had made an appointment, I completely relaxed. It was very easy for me because you come downstairs to the workers' level and there are shoemakers of all sorts and kinds and you're introduced to everybody and I just completely relaxed. It was easy for me.
The familiar smells, familiar tools.
And I never ever looked back and it was fine for me eventually. Then I had to go up to John Lobb's office and meet him and he grilled me and said, you know, do you realise it takes this long and that long? But I was sort of armed with knowing that I want to be down in the bottom. I'm quite happy if I'm never in your sales room, sir. I'll just stay down the bottom. I'd come in the tradesman's entrance, put my bicycle up, and yeah, I connected with them immediately. Took me no time at all.
And how often were you there? Once a week?
Or? Once a week, yep. That's right. Yep. I loved it, cycling down to St. James. Mm. All those little things, you know, it's just memory for me, but I had a really special time in London. I was very lucky, I feel, to have met those people. I mean, in the same breath, you know, I loved being at Lobb's and it wasn't anything to do with actually the pomp and ceremony or even, I wasn't even that interested in their sort of way of making shoes in terms of the what their bespoke shoes are all about is this sort of hand-sewn, it is made for elite gentlemen. Their women's shoes were really not anything to talk about. And so I wasn't very drawn to that. But I was very, very drawn to the last makers and I was very drawn to the pattern cutters and the closers. And that was kind of what developed. And so it just happened sort of, it seemed just a natural progression for me to befriend them. And so we became friends and then I'd be really kind of interested that Lobb's people were coming to my shop in Camden to have a look at what I was doing. I was thinking, well, why are they coming here? They could go there. But they were fascinated because I do everything myself.
John Lobb says it takes 190 steps to make every pair of its shoes. Sue Ingalls says it takes that and then some in the crafting of hers. I'm Lisa Thompson and you're listening to Spectrum on Radio New Zealand National. This week I'm with shoemaker Sue Ingalls at her workshop on Waiheke Island. From clicking to hand skiving, insole ribbing to tapping up, Sue uses traditional methods to hand cut and mould materials such as ostrich and snake leather into bespoke boots, sandals and slides.
How long would it take you to fashion a pair of shoes from scratch?
Anything from about 8 hours, which is really a very simple slingback or sandal, something like that, to, I say, usually about 3 days for something quite complex. That's working hours. So 3 days is, yeah, quite complex. You know, it depends what I'm doing. Some things look simple and they're not. Lots of pieces together, that can take a long time in the closing department. Two quite different feet can look different, can take more time in the making department because I have to battle to get them to look good. Something that's new to me that I haven't done before can sometimes be a problem in the making department because my pattern's not quite as I envisaged it, although that's become a lot less over the years. I mean, this is definitely a craft of experience, so I used to take a lot longer with those things. I don't take that long anymore. But I take everything quite slowly so that I don't hurt too much or do too much intensely. So I tend to make about 5 or 6 pairs of shoes in a go. Mm-hmm. So as you've come in here today, as I was saying, it's quite tidy to me because I'm just starting a new session. So I'm busy making a pair of sandals over there. I'm cutting out a pair of slingbacks over here. I'm making patterns for a large pair of shoes on those big green lasts. I've made a pattern and waiting for the leather to come with the next piece. So everything is kind of in stages, and I really try and do that more and more as time goes by. I've found that it's easier on my body if I do it that way.
Yeah, and you can move that process through.
Yeah. So that pair of shoes does not take 3 days. It'll take, your order will take 3 months, but I won't usually start it for the first month or so, and then it'll come into row and a bit of last making will happen.
But you make no excuse, though, for the length of time a bespoke pair of shoes takes.
It takes what it does. Takes, it's the whole thing is it is so different to manufacturing that I can't even begin to compare it to that. But in the bespoke world, I used to bank on making 3 pairs a week, but now I kind of reckon on 2. I probably put a bit more into them,
is, I would say. And how have you found coming through to New Zealand? Mm. Our perceptions of having a pair of shoes made?
I think not just New Zealand, but sort of worldwide, things have changed because there is, in some ways, there's more choice these days because there are more, shoes are made kind of differently and there seems to be more available for the wider foot or what have you, and there's lots of sport shoes and that sort of thing. But I find that whether it's here or elsewhere, there are always people that just actually would like to have something that fits their feet. And then I have quite a large amount of my clients, it may be after they've had one pair or so, that they really realise what my shoes are about. And I've had that said to me quite often, Sue, it's just dawned on me what your shoes are about. Because they're so sort of old fashioned, they have these layers of leather. And those layers of leather work together and they breathe together. It's an organic assembly, and there is something particular about that, because as I said right at the beginning, your feet are your carriage and it does make a difference. So there are those people that just actually want that, and I find it's no different in New Zealand than elsewhere, and it's always the same kind of people who just actually value where they spend their money and what they spend their money on and what they get for it. It's not about having heaps of money. A lot of my clients, they don't come from that kind of background. Some of them pay off little bits of lay-by, until I've started the job. And it's never been about that. And yet some of my clients have more money than the rest of us will ever. But most of them, it's for the same reason. They just actually choose this sort of shoe.
And while the majority of Sue's shoes get packaged up and sent to customers all over the world, shoe lovers can also visit her showroom known as the Shoe Shed.
Hey, do you want to come up to the showroom and have a look at some of my pairs?
Thank you. Absolutely. I'll be tempted. Bring my bag with me.
See, this is my house. I reckon about 1930s, 40s.
Oh, it's lovely.
It was probably one kitchen.
Yep.
The studio we've just been in was the old wash house, and it had a kitchen and a lounge, I think.
Gosh, here we go.
And where I come from in South Africa, we call this die voorkamer, the front room. So welcome.
Thank you. And I come. Are my shoes clean?
Hope they are.
Just give them a quick wipe. Oh, look, so this is your showroom.
So this is a showroom, yeah.
This front room just serves so
it's
well.
It's just perfect, isn't it?
It's almost made for your showroom, isn't it?
And I just love that little concept. Some of these things have come back to me. Having lived away from South Africa for so many years, I'd forgotten certain things. And, of course, I'm very fluent in Afrikaans. And there's a favourite performer of mine, South African performer, Pieter Dirk Ace. Tani Evita, we call him, and he dresses in drag, and he is the most amazing man, and he's always been very outspoken about our previous government, and he's a huge fan of Nelson Mandela and all sorts of people, and takes them all off very well. And he started an amazing theatre cafe place, and once a year he has this amazing, it's kind of like a theatre weekend,
Yeah.
And it's and everybody performs in die Voorkamer. It's called die Voorkamer Festival or something, or Fest, yeah. Which I just thought was amazing, which means, you know, in your front room. And so you go into different little cottages and people perform in the front room. So when we came here, I thought, oh, yeah, I think I'll be quite comfortable in the front room.
Well, this is your performance area.
Yeah.
This is it.
This is where they show themselves off.
Do you have people stop you and say, where do you get... Have you ever had that happen? Where do you get those shoes?
Not so much, I don't find, but certainly my clients do. Yeah, that's an interesting question as well.
Where do you get those shoes?
I don't,
Well, I just wonder.
And my mother gets that a lot, which is gorgeous. My mother turned 83 yesterday, and she gets 20-odd-year-olds stopping her in the street, the sandals she has on, the long boots she wears. Where did you get your boots? I love them. And she goes, my daughter makes them for me.
Oh, that's fantastic.
It's such a sweet... sweet story for my mum to have. She loves her shoes.
Did they ever imagine the path you've taken?
No. My mother and my sister are both great fans of my shoes and wear them. My sister is very tall. She's much taller than me, and she has bigger feet than me, longer, slender feet. So, you know, the knee-high boots.
Perfect.
No, they didn't expect it. No, nobody really worked with their hands in the family except my grandmother, who was a tailor, and that's her old sewing machine down there.
Oh, what a special heirloom. Goodness, what is
it? I finally managed to bring it back because it's a container, hey?
The singer. There's another singer. And a beautiful box, a walnut box or something similar. Yeah. Have you ever used such it?
I have as a child, yeah. And as soon as I was given it, you know, I turned it because there's a certain ring to Granny's sewing machine that the others don't have. It's like something went loose in it, I think, in its youth. Anyway, I know the sound of that sewing machine. It's my grandmother's sewing machine.
And now you have it.
I know. I kind of feel sad about it because I can't really use it much.
Is it just because of the size of it, it's too small? Or?
Yeah, and to be honest with you, I don't have that much time on the weekends to do sewing, because when I do take time off, I do other stuff like building and gardening, which I love. So it doesn't get used, which is dreadfully sad, but it's here in spirit, and that's really good, because she sewed until the day she died.
On leaving South Africa, you stepped out and you had your craft beginning to bubble away, and you've honed that over the years and you've made it your living. Any regrets that you haven't gone back permanently to South Africa to carry on?
No, it was very good for me to go back and be there for 5 years, because I did have a feeling that I needed to... I think it's about healing and seeing and being, and you don't do any of that when you're on holiday. You have rose-tinted glasses and everything is sunny and great. And really, at the end of the day, it's a choice. You know, I have a partnership and I made a choice years ago, and that is the most important, and we need to both be somewhere where we can both flourish and do stuff. So there's certain things that I will always miss. I was very lucky to have grown up in such a beautiful part of the world with beautiful people. And, you know, I'm still passionate about it and how things go, and we all hope that it will turn into a great world for everybody, because it needs a lot of work at the moment.
It's hard times at the moment, especially with what's happening with Nelson Mandela.
With Nelson, yeah. Utata is in a very bad way at the moment, but he's a very old man and he's done amazing things. And there are many, many people there who could follow in his footsteps, and I do wish that they can start going in that direction. It's been very controlled by a few, and I have hopes that it will change. There's a very promising leader in South Africa at the moment, Ms. Mampela Rampela, who's the former partner of Steve Biko, and she, for one, is someone who might just get the strength in numbers, because that's all it takes.